Okay, so this idea that obviously we've now talked about, hopefully you kind of get this picture now that wake up, rise and shine is not for us a linear line. It's a circle. It's looking at the mission that God has called us to, that we wake up to Jesus, we rise to life, and then we shine so other people can then do the same thing. And as long as this circle keeps happening, Jesus said the gates of hell can't overcome us. When the circle stops, we get fat and lazy and stop growing. And so, that's a challenge to us. Underneath all of that, and I apologize if this doesn't flow as well as it should, but sort of, I guess, take that whole thing and like under it, what's holding it, maybe the most important key in all of this. And it's this last section here will kind of tie together a lot of the stuff I already said. Is one of the most basic, powerful, simple, but difficult ideas. That the whole idea of this whole thing happening and continuing, of you waking up to this reality, accepting it, finding that life, and then helping others find it, really comes down to one basic idea that Jesus put before us, and it's elevating others. Or to put it simply, maybe to even use the same word we've used, loving others. Doing this is built around this, right? Like inviting, investing, involving, all of those things are at their core part of this decision of whether or not you will elevate others. It's such a big thing. It really is kind of our whole last session together. So if you remember last week, I talked about how these religious leaders came to Jesus and they said, Jesus, what's the most important command? And you kind of remember what he said, right? He said, the greatest command in the law, love the Lord your God with your heart, soul, all your mind. This is the first and greatest command. As I mentioned last week, everyone listening was like, all right, bravo, good job, Jesus, you nailed it. Okay, guys, he's okay. He's not a heretic, you know? But then Jesus kept talking. I wasn't there, but I imagine at that moment, like you can see all the religious leaders like, okay, he's still talking. Wait, what? Because he goes, oh, and then the second. And now just to be clear, and I want to make sure you get this. Every Jewish person in Jesus' day knew this. Everybody knew this. They prayed it twice a day. It was their pledge of allegiance. Hear, O Israel, the Lord God is one. Love the Lord your God with your heart, soul, and strength. Like, this is it. That is the most important thing. Yes, Jesus, you got it. The second, guys, there wasn't a second. There was no second. There was one. The Shema is it. That is the commandment. And Jesus said, the second is like it. The second is like it. Love your neighbor as yourself. Now, this was also not new. Jesus did not make up love your neighbor, right? That's in the Torah. But if we're talking about, like, if the Torah is a book, the first command to love, that's on page one. This is page like 87, right? Jesus took page 87 and went, nope, it's number 1B, and it's just like it. So they're all nodding in agreement. Yeah, Jesus is God, love God. And the second, what second? The second is like it, love your neighbors yourself. He gives the normal stock answer every good Jewish person would agree with, and then he tweaks it to include another command that was never considered that important. A Jewish person would never have said, love your neighbor is just as important as loving God. Those concepts didn't exist together. Yes, you're supposed to love your neighbor, but that's, there's a lot of things we're supposed to do. And Jesus is like, actually, it's the second and it's just like it. Meaning loving other people isn't just a good idea. It's not just a little add-on. It's not, well, you were saved, go to heaven, and then also maybe love some people if you get around to it. He's actually saying something profound here, that it's central and core to the entire Jesus project, which the entire Jesus Project is remaking God's world and reforming humanity, which means that loving your neighbor as yourself is central and core to what God intends for you as a human being. It's not just like, oh, now that you're a Christian, try to be a nice person. It's no. Being a Christian is being remade into God's image. And this is part of being God's image. Now, you've mentioned it last week. I mentioned it briefly, but this fun Hebrew word, ahava, that we translate as love. Faithful commitment. And I think Nada from their Hebrew dictionary, chooses to place the interests of others ahead of yourself. Elevating others. The Hebrew word love spoke of elevating others above yourself. It's a word that means to be committed wholeheartedly and thinking about the betterment or well-being of another person as your priority, working for their good, even above your own. So when Jesus says, love God, ahava God, yes, put God first, elevate him. His priority is most important. What he wants is most important. He's God. But actually, treat your neighbor the same way. Well, it's great when speaking of God, everyone would be like, yeah, of course, allegiance, faithfulness, Jesus, lay your life down, obey God, right? But Jesus drops the mic and says, if you really want to be like me, you need to apply that same attitude and love to God towards the people around you. And this was revolution. What was the response? Well, who's my neighbor? I mean, the other good Jews, right? Actually, know your enemies that you fight with all the time are your neighbors as well. Love them. And he was relentless in trying to instill this idea in his followers, constantly telling them that this is what it meant to rise up and find life in his kingdom. It meant to put others above and elevate them. And there's this place in Matthew, I want to read this to you. It says this. Jesus calls his disciples together and said, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles lord it over them. They want to elevate themselves of other people. Their high officials exercise authority. But then he says, this is how humans behave, right? We all know this. We want to get power so we can be better than other people and have all this stuff. That's how the world works. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant. And whoever wants to be first must be your slave. So compare those two ideas. Most people want to become more powerful so they get higher up and can dominate because that's a better life. And he's saying, but you actually need to do the opposite. Go to the very bottom. Not so with you. Instead, but here's, don't ever miss this. It's so important. I just love this statement right here. Whoever wants to become great. So I am ending with this. I'm not starting with it. All right, we're in session 6. Whoever wants to become great. Jesus isn't saying, here's the thing, guys. I want you all to suffer and be slaves. Right? We already talked about that the first week. Other nations, like the Egyptians, believed the gods just wanted you to be a slave and have a horrible life to make them happy. No. He's saying, actually, greatness is available to you. The good, blessed world that God created, the kind of life that God dreamed of when he made you is available to you. But if you want to find it, it's going to come by being a servant to others, even a slave. And then he doesn't just give the command as a tyrant, yelling and you just need to do this. He actually bases it off his own actions, saying, just as the Son of Man, just as I did not come to be treated, be slaved over, is how that served. Like, I didn't come for people to act like slaves to me, but instead I came and acted like a slave to others, and I gave my life away as a ransom. That word ransom is a slave term. We would sell money to win people's freedom. I basically gave myself away so you could be freed from slavery. I offered myself as a slave. And make no mistake, Jesus uses the word slave here. He does start in the New Testament. And I know it's difficult because our aversion to it because of our really gross history in America, But for them, the word slave, we often translate it again in English as serve, because English Bibles want to try to be sensitive. I think that's probably good. But it means slave. It's a complete loss of rights. Jesus isn't sugarcoating things. He's calling his followers to act like people who have no rights, no prestige, no status of any kind, to do the lowest, most menial task. And he does so by pointing out that he himself acted the same way. And this idea would trigger something for the Apostle Paul. And I want to tie to, last week I talked about renewing your mind. And I talked about how I use this Greek word phroneo that I said is like worldview. Remember that idea of worldview last week? How you see things, how you think, what you think about the world. That term gets used here in Philippians. Paul says this. This is a huge, huge verse. I think this is like Paul's biggest statement in the entire Bible. In your relationships with one another. Well, in your relationship with one another is not a small thing. It's the thing. It's everything, right? So everything Jesus taught was about our relationship with one another. Have the same mindset, worldview, thought process, view of life as King Jesus, Christ Jesus. So how did Jesus view reality? What did Jesus think was true? Who, being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a slave, being made in human likeness, and found appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. This is known as the kenosis passage, for the verb made himself nothing can be translated as emptied or rid of. And Paul's telling us that we are called to love and serve one another because that's the mindset of Jesus. Because that's something about who he is. It's the same attitude as Jesus. Jesus laid down his life and served others. And there's a very interesting nuance here that I want to talk about. And scholars kind of argue about it. Again, I love words, sorry. But I want to look at this idea. It says this, have the same mindset of Jesus, who, being in the nature God, did not consider equality, or like this equality with God. What's going on here? Remember week one, I talked about the Garden of Eden, and the serpent said, eat from the knowledge of good and evil, you'll be just like God yourself. Something to be grasped. Like, I want to take the fruit and I'll be just like God myself. Instead, he said, nope, God, I'm letting go of that whole part of me right now. And instead, I'm becoming a slave. But look at this idea of being in very nature God. When you read that, it's interesting because it can kind of be read two ways, and your brain can kind of, depending on how you read it, how you think about it. On the one hand, and this is probably the more common way that we read it, it sort of sounds like, especially in English, like he's saying, almost like he added the word although. Although he was God, he still did this thing, right? But the word although is not in the Greek. In the Greek, this literally translates as Jesus existing in the nature of God, .. Why am I telling you that? Because I don't think Paul is actually saying here, although Jesus was God, I think he was saying Jesus is God, and maybe even because Jesus is God. And think about this for a second. And again, I didn't come up with this, but it really fascinates me. Is Paul communicating to us that even though he was God, he actually did something really nice? Or is he saying Jesus is the image of the invisible God? And what Jesus does and says shows us who God is. If you want to know what God is like, you look at Jesus, right? Like, I didn't make that up. That's not. So if Jesus does something, it's not even though he was God, it's he is God. It is his nature. And I would argue that what Paul is getting at here in Philippians 2 is saying, Jesus is showing us who God actually is by becoming a human being and taking on the nature of a slave, because it is God's nature to love and value. Even though he's God, he elevates these creatures that he loves, and he's willing to suffer for them. That Christ, being God in nature, lived in humility and rejected pride and selfish ambition because that's who God is. Are you guys kind of tracking with me? Like, he's showing us God. And if there was anything crazier than this for people in the ancient world, you couldn't imagine it. I'm going to get sidetracked. When people created gods, which they did, they created gods who looked like themselves. Right? Like when they dreamed up Jupiter or Zeus, what is Zeus? Just a absentee father who sleeps with anything that moves, bunch of kids, kind of a jerk, because that's what kings are, right? They created the gods that they thought they're. All the gods in the ancient world just look like broken people. And what did all the gods want? Power, sex, money, glory. That's what gods want. That's what gods are. They're just more powerful human beings. And here comes Jesus saying, no. That's not who God is. That's the gods you've created because you wanted power for yourself. Let me show you who God really is. I think that when Jesus came in the form of a slave, he wasn't disguising God's nature, he was revealing it. Now, I'm not saying God is a slave, but God's nature is literally love. Like, and love is elevating others and a faithful commitment, working for the interests of others. That is who God is. That loving and serving others is a direct reflection of the nature and character of our Creator. So, if God's nature is that kind of love, that he would be willing to lay his life down for the good of others, what should his image bearers look like? Sometimes we talk about being Christian and we use words like love and kindness and charity as if they're sort of like, well, now that you said yes to Jesus, he kind of wants you to be nice to people. Like, it's sort of like, yeah, I guess what I should do, I'm a Christian. Why? Why should you do that? Why does being a Christian have anything to do with loving people? Why does being a Christian have anything to do with humility or kindness? It's because it's who our God is, and you were created to look like our God. When you choose to look like Jesus, you are becoming the person God made you to be. He's doing something crazy to our minds because our minds are like broken. Like, I can't make sense. I want to lord it over people. I want power. You say, that's not who I created humans to be. That's your brokenness talking. Your attitude should be the same as Jesus since you're his disciple. But I want you to listen to the Apostle Peter. He says this, clothe yourself with humility towards one another because God opposes the proud and gives grace to the humble. And I think that's such a powerful verse. Clothe yourself with humility. But he's saying something about who God is, right? He's saying, you should do this because this is something true about who God is. Humility is actually true of God. He calls his followers to clothe themselves in humility. First, what God accepts, but what God opposes pride because God is not proud. God is by his very nature humble, which is crazy. And Paul even says this Corinthians. Paul says, a crucified Messiah, a cross is a stumbling block to Greeks. They can't, like, what kind of God dies on a cross? That's stupid. Your weak, pathetic God. That's not what gods do. It gets worse or better, depending on how you look at it. Because this is kind of hidden, but really awesome. In Greek, this word has a deep, deep meaning, clothe yourself. It's a euphemism that they would have understood. It literally translates as wrap a towel, like as a kind of around your waist, almost like a waiter maybe. What you need to know about clothe yourself is slave language. So in the ancient world, they didn't really have roads. Everything was dirt. They had a few brick roads. Everything was dirt. They didn't have plumbing, running water. And you had hundreds and hundreds of people living on top of each other, right? What do? They would just take everything and just dump it in the street. They would do some like gutters on the sides of the road and stuff, but it was gross. And nobody had clothes. Everybody wore sandals. A lot of people went barefoot. So in that world, you can just imagine animals everywhere. People just dumping literal feces out of their windows onto the streets. Your feet were the grossest thing about it. right? You were walking in literal human and animal excrement on a regular basis. So because of this, when you went into someone's home, the polite thing to do was to wash your feet, right? To get that crap off your feet. It's gross. It smelled. You don't want to drag it in the house. People of average and lower than average means, normal people, would have a little stool or something with a basin of water next to the door. So I would walk in, I'd be polite, wash my feet, and I'd go in the house. People with means would have a slave do it. So only a slave would do it. In the Roman world, only a slave washed feet. If you didn't have a slave, you do it yourself, right? No one else touches your feet. That's disgusting. But a slave who's worthless property and has no rights could wash feet. So in a rich house, rather than a little boulder, you'd actually have a human being standing there. And they would stand there, they'd have the water, they'd have a towel, and when the guest walked in, they would take the towel and they would wrap it around their waist. And they would bend down and wash literal feces off people's feet. The grossest, most demeaning thing you could do. Not only are you touching disgusting feet, but you're having to kneel down and put yourself in a low position. It's the most humiliating thing you could do. And no free person could ever do it. A free person would never do that. Only a slave would do that. To clothe yourself in a slave apron and wash feet. No upstanding person with any dignity would ever stoop so low as to degrade themselves by washing another person's feet. So Jesus got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. He poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with a towel that was wrapped around him. He was doing this to Peter. And what was Peter's reaction? Peter freaked out. Stop it! Stop it, Jesus! What are you doing? Stand up! Take that stupid towel off! No way, Jesus! Jesus, you're the king! You can't! What are you doing? What? Jesus, I left my family to follow you because I thought you were going to like rise up and control the world. And when you were there, I would be important with you. Like I wanted to be like the king's right hand man, right? We were going to have power and money. We're going to kill Romans. We're going to make, Israel great again. It's going to be awesome. What are you doing right now? What are you doing? You can't wash my feet. Jesus, that's what slaves do. We're poor fishermen, but we're not slaves. Have some dignity. Get up. I wonder if in this moment there was one guy in the room who said, I'm done. I'm done. And he went out and made an agreement to betray Jesus. I'm not going to act like a slave. Forget that. And look at Jesus' response. Jesus says, now that I, your Lord and teacher, and Lord is also a slave language, kurios is someone who owns slaves. I have washed your feet. You also should wash one another's. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done. For no slave is greater than his master. And he's just put Peter in an absolute mind ninja moment here. Like there's no way out of this. He's saying his command for us to serve and love one another is based on the fact that he did it first. But if he did it and he's God, then it's also telling us something about who God is. God acted like a slave and then said, are you my image bearers? Are you my disciples? Are you the people that I created to look like me? Follow me. And if you don't, you're saying you're better than me. Are you better than me? And I think this would have been like the most shocking moment to these guys sitting there watching this. I think like all their dreams and expectations just crumbling around them in this moment. Like, what are you talking about? Sometimes you see and I'm making this up, I don't know, but why do these guys follow Jesus? Like, oh, he just seemed like a really good guy, he has cool hair, and I like the sash he wears. This is my opinion. I think these guys follow Jesus for the same reason that like famous rappers have like 12 people that follow them everywhere they go. And like one guy's carrying the dog, the other carries bling, someone, you know, like why are all these people following this guy? He's just such a great guy. No, he's friggin' rich, right? They want in on the life they think this person is gonna give them. So they'll like lay down their coat on a pile of mud so he doesn't get his alligator shoes dirty, because they just hope that as he gets richer and more famous, he'll pull them up with him. And what happens if that famous, powerful, rich rapper is like, actually, I'm going to give all my money away to the poor and go live in a convent. Outdeuces. His whole entourage is going to disappear. It's just like, you know how other people do it. You know what other people think is greatness. In your head, you know what it looks like to have power and to be a king. You know how the Gentiles lord it over and exercise their authority. And you think that's what you're going to get from following me. Let me show you what it really looks like to follow me. And he acts like a slave. True, ultimate humility. There's nothing you could have done in that world to elevate people more than that, because he literally put himself at the bottom, right? He put himself at the bottom by washing their feet. So his followers are God's image bearers. How can we be different? I think this is what he meant later in John. As I have loved you, so you should love one another. That, I would have changed the word. By this, everyone will know you're my disciples. By this. By, like, not by who you vote for, not by the bumper sticker you put on your car, not by what radio station you listen to, not how much you tithe or give. Like Jesus said, the way that the world would know you follow me is that you would elevate others above yourself. That you would lay your life down for other people. There's a famous verse, you know, greater love has no man than he that lay his life down for his friend. We often quote that at funerals, which is fun, but he doesn't literally mean like, that word doesn't really mean die. It means surrender yourself, like lay down and let someone else be greater than you. This is how you'll know you're my disciple. And so we talk about waking up, rising and shining. It's like, what exactly are you waking up to? What kind of life are you rising up to? Jesus is saying, this is the life I'm calling you to. That I'm calling you to lay your life down and serve other people. And that's what will shine. Because that's who he is. And this is why I think God has such a strong attitude concerning this issue. Like pride and self-centeredness, they ruin our relationships and they ruin God's world. Because they're contrary to our humanity. We're not created for it. No one enjoys being around arrogant, self-centered people, right? But there's something we're drawn to when people, like we see Mother Teresa, we're like, wow, you know? And it's like, I think in those moments, you're seeing what we're made for and it appeals to us, even though it's difficult. And the things that we're doing that are so gross, they're actually not how we're supposed to be. Pride and selfishness, they think like that sort of like, ignorant three-year-old, right? Where the most important thing in the world is me and everything revolves around me. But Jesus is saying, that's not what I intended when I made you. Rather, and this is a big statement, I know, but I think Jesus says that self-sacrificial love is the mark of a true human. Like, do you want to know what a human is supposed to be? Look at Jesus. What did Jesus do? He laid his life down. He could have come and raised armies. He could have built empires and thrown down kings. He could have lived a lavish, luxury lifestyle. He could have demanded everyone bow and scrape to his whim. Instead, he came humbly in a stable to a nobody young girl in a backwater town under one star rather than five, right? Smelly shepherds welcomed him. He grew up in obscurity, lived poorly, walked away from everything he could have had. Anytime people offered him money or power, he walked away from it. And in the end, he chose to let them drive nails in his hands over what he wanted. He said, not my will, but yours be done, God. And in doing so, and I just, he was showing us God's plan for our lives. Isn't that heavy? Like, doesn't that just make you feel, oh no? But he was saying, look at me, I'm what you were made for, now follow me. That's what a true human looks like. And there's something heavy there. And if you don't feel it, you're not seeing it. Like, that's heavy. And I would argue this, it's so heavy that no one would choose it on their own because it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense that that could bring about greatness. It doesn't make sense that laying down my life could ever bring about a better life, right? My brain does not compute that. It says, no, that's not right. I'll have a better life by getting what I want, right? I want to get higher up, closer to the penthouse, and then my life will be better. I don't want to go put myself in the mailroom. And yet Jesus calls us to it. And he says, trust me. Put your faith in me and follow me. And remember in the first week, it was like I told you, like waking up to Jesus is in some ways accepting something that doesn't quite make sense. It's coming to this place of saying, okay, I live in a broken world full of broken people, and that's how they behave. And Jesus is telling me to do this, even though it looks weird. Do I continue thinking this is good, even though, or do I trust my creator and go that way? And that is living by faith, right? It's saying, Jesus is offering me a different kind of life. It doesn't make sense, but I'm going to trust him because he's God. He did it, so I'm going to follow him. And I think in doing so, there's a couple things that come out of it. To follow him, I think, starts with choosing to serve. It's giving up the consumeristic, give me, feed me, help me mentality that often just makes us spiritually overweight and worthless. We think being a Christian is all about other people helping us grow. God is calling us to help others grow. Kind of everything I already said, choosing to give, to offer, jumping from church to church, complaining about those who won't do enough for us, when in truth, growing into the image of Jesus happens a lot faster when we lay all that down and serve others and help them grow. Like, if you want to grow more, serve more. It's backwards, isn't it? It seems like if you want to grow more, you should have, I need to listen to more teaching. Pete, do another class. Like, I'll do another class, but I'm telling you, it's not, you're not going to grow as much as if you just start serving people. Because this is the kingdom right here. Maybe I'll just do another class about this. I don't know. It's following Jesus and laying our lives down. It's part of the beautiful mystery of his kingdom. And he says things like this, whoever wants to save their life will lose it. But whoever loses their life for me will find it. And that's a big deal. Like, he's not just saying die, lose your life. He's actually saying find your life by losing it. And it's a mystery, right? And being a servant, giving up your life, you don't always get to pick and choose. I remember when I first started following Jesus, I became an intern at a church, and I had a very clear perception in my mind about what getting into the church would be, because I was in a band in college and whatever. And so if you'd ask me, Pete, what will it look like to get into ministry? It looked like this. And I was like, that guy? And it was like, yeah, you know? And I remember one of the guys that I worked for was like, oh, actually, here, let's do this. And I was like, what? No. I'm not cleaning toilets. But I remember I was like 21, and I remember him being like, well, didn't you say you wanted to follow Jesus? Like, lay your life down. Because in many ways, like, this looks way more like Jesus than this. Doesn't it? We don't like that, but it does.
Isn't that
those songs? It might be. I wasn't meaning anything by that. I was not meaning about that. And secondly, and it's related, I we kind of talked about it, this idea of giving. I don't just mean money, but I mean generosity as a way of life that says, like, I'm going to live open-handedly. Because living open-handedly elevates other people above yourself. When I hold on, I'm holding on because it's about me and what I want. When I let go, I'm saying it's about what you want and what you need. And it's a different way to look at it. And as I shared with you guys, I've seen a lot of abuse, a lot. And I struggle sometimes when churches talk about money, and I work for one. But I also know that Jesus was right when he said, where your treasure is, there your heart is. And I want my heart to align with God. And God is generous. Like, God is generous. God is a giver. And I am created in God's image. God elevates others by giving of himself and giving what they need. And like, for me to hoard and hold on and cling to, I'm not looking like God. Greed is a lie. And here's the deal, guys. And I struggle with this because I can be a greedy person. I grew up kind of poor and just really wrestle with fear. I don't have enough money and I want to hold on to things. But that's dehumanizing because it's not what I was made for. If I was made to look like God, I was made to be generous. And greed tells me that I need to succeed and win and materialism and wealth and get a boat and all these things, and those will bring about the life that I want. But nothing will sink us faster and keep us from being generous and believing success equals more money. It doesn't. It doesn't. We all know rich people are miserable. But if greed and selfishness is poison, I would just say this, like, I think that generosity is an antidote. I think generosity is God saying, let me help you look more like me. I'm gonna guide you and I'm gonna show you as you give, you're undoing some of your brokenness. You're giving of your time, your abilities, your money, you're choosing to invite people, you're choosing to invest in people, you're choosing to show up and do things you may not wanna do. And as you do, you're beginning to see who God is. And that's the whole idea of what we're talking about here, coming to understand the way that Jesus has turned a system on its head. And the way that we think about ourselves is the problem. And I just want to say it this way. Like, this is a big statement, but I don't want to lose sight of the fact that Jesus didn't say, just die to yourself. He said, die to yourself in order to find life. He said, if you want to be great, here's the pathway. That means there is a better life to be had. There is greatness to be had. But according to Jesus, success in God's kingdom is given to those who give their lives away, who lay their lives down the way that he did, not those who amass the biggest bank account or die with the most toys. And that doesn't always make sense. It doesn't always add up. But that's really what this whole class has been about from the beginning, right? Waking up to a new reality that challenges the assumptions that are in your heart, that challenges the things that you say make sense, but actually, wait, do they? Are they right? That the scriptures and the word of God, the message of Jesus, it confronts our thinking. And it says, is that actually what will bring you better? Is that actually what will bring you life? And again, this is all wisdom talk. What's good for you? What's best for you? What will bring out your best life? And Jesus is saying the things that you're pursuing are not doing it, and they're not helping others do it. So give that up and follow me. That the, like, if we have to come to something like, waking up this, maybe the Bible is right. And having rejected God and seeking wisdom for ourselves has made our thinking counterfeit. And what we think will make us happy is actually leading us the wrong way. And we're so confused when rich rock stars who've achieved their dream pull out a gun and shoot themselves in the head. And we say, how could that ever happen? How could they not be happy? It keeps happening over and over and over. It's like this just recurring thing where people who seek after this thing and then they're not happy. And yet, it'll make me happy. And Jesus is saying, what if you tried a different path? Come and follow me. And I've always wrestled with this verse. He says, many who are first will be last, and many who are last will be first. And I think, again, you look at this, he's not saying there's no such thing as first, is he? He's not saying be last. He's actually saying there is a first and there's a last. There is a getting ahead. He is the guy who said, I've come to give you life to the fullest, right? Jesus is the God who created the world and said it is good. And he's looking at us and saying, follow me and I'll give you life. But then he says stuff like this. And it's like, what? I died to myself, crosses, slavery, what? And I want to tell you a story here for the last couple minutes. And it's a stupid story, but when I was a little kid, like in like second grade, I was, let's just leave it at chubby. I was chubby. I was not a good athlete by any means. And one of the worst things about first and second grade that I vividly remember was this thing that we did every day called kickball. And I hated kickball so much. What's that? It's triggering you too? Okay, sorry, it's gonna stay up there. But here's the thing, like I sucked at kickball and I wasn't good at it. But more than that, remember, why do we do this to ourselves? You would go out in the playground and you would stand like on the curb with all the other kids. And then two kids who were better than you would just point, you. And it was like them. And every person that went off the curb was one more just kick in the face to my self-esteem. And then it's just like me and this tiny little girl. And they're like, I'll take the girl. And I'm like, you know, and like every day you're subjected to this horror of just, I don't even want to go out there. I used to like pretend I was sick. And then I do remember, I don't remember a lot from being that little, but I do remember this vividly. I remember having this thought pop into my brain that said, you know, rather than pretending I'm sick or whatever, there's another way here. There's another way to avoid this pain I'm feeling. I could be one of those people, right? Like those guys, the ones with the power that are picking the teams, they don't hate themselves. They don't struggle with their own insecurities. What do I got to do to get that? And this is where things started to turn for me. Because in second grade, we had this elaborate system that was well thought out and clearly brought about the best leaders. You had to be the first one out there and dribble the ball like 20 times, then you were captain. And here's the deal. I couldn't really kick a dodgeball very well, and I wasn't fast. I couldn't run very fast. But the only thing that you needed to do to get out there and be a captain was eat fast. And that was my spiritual gift. I could eat. So I realized that I, like one day I just like stubbed on my foot, like, and I got out. I remember getting out there the first time. I was the first one outside. I'm standing there and I have the ball in my hand. And I'm like, I've arrived. And all the kids slowly trickled out. And as they did, they like looked at me like, he has the power. I'm like, you're last. I hate you. You know. And I got, and I just remember being like, I'm not last today. But then other kids started getting onto it. It quickly, everyone was like, whoa. So we all would just race to shovel our food down our throats and get outside. Well, now, if we're all eating at the same speed, it's not about who eats the best. It's about who gets their food first. So it was about getting first in line to get your food. And this would always come back into the classroom. If you guys remember this, like I would sit there and you'd be like in your little desk there and you'd just be watching the clock and you'd be ticking. It'd be like 11:20 and you're gonna hear that little bell and it's gonna be lunchtime. It's like 11:19. Those last like 40 seconds are so slow and all the kids are like getting up, ready to just pummel each other. And as soon as the bell would hit, and ding, the room would just explode. We just jump out of our seats and we're punching and kicking and everything you can do. We're just going crazy because you got to get to the front of that line because the first person in that line is the first person outside. They're a captain. They're not going to be a loser today, right? But here's what would happen. And it would just, these things just stick on me. There would be those days where I would just, everything inside of me was committed to getting there. And I would, you know, and I remember those moments where I found myself standing at the front of the door and looking back and all these like, you know, bleeding children behind me. It didn't matter. I was first today. I made it, you know, didn't matter who I had to step on, but I got here. And then you'd have this, your moment of triumph. You hear the teacher say, well, if you're going to behave that way, we'll just let the end of the line go first. no! All my striving for nothing. And I remember when I was reading that passage, many who are first will be last. And I was thinking about that little insecure second grader trying so hard to throw the line. And I realized that he never grew up. And he became a 43-year-old still fighting to get to the front of the line. Because then maybe I'll feel better about myself and have a better life and be happier. But again and again and again, it just ends up being worthless and leaving a trail of wounded people behind me. And that is how so many of us keep living our lives. And Jesus shows up on the scene and he says, here's the deal, guys. You spend your entire life trying to get yours, right? Make your own life better. You know, you don't realize, though, that where's that actually leading? Is your life better because you were a captain of the kickball team? And you and I, an hour later in life, like, that's so stupid, dumb little kids seeking after things that didn't matter. I need to go buy a boat. Oh, because that mattered, right? We've just replaced dumb things with other dumb things. And we keep seeking these things and trying to get them at the cost of other people and our health and all this stuff. And many who are rich in this world and thought they were winning are going to be in for a rude awakening, either in this life or in the next, right? Because it never leads where we think it will. It's always been a lie. We never find true contentment by hoarding and getting and stomping other people. We just become worse humans. And then Jesus is saying, what if you laid that life down? What if you gave up? What if you stopped worrying about when you were picked? What if it didn't even matter if you were last picked? What if you made yourself last? And herein lies, I think, the great mystery of the gospel. That Jesus is in this line with us. And we are fighting and clawing to get to the front. And the whole time he's like, after you. Oh, go ahead. Really? It's cool. It's fine. And he's putting himself at the other end of the line. And I'm going this way. And he's going that way. And the only person who can actually offer me true fulfillment and contentment and joy in my life is at the other end of the line. And he's saying, you're welcome to come join me. It's actually better over here.
No, that's not better. I don't know. But over here, I'm in charge, I'm king, I'm captain.
Okay, good luck with that. And again and again in my life, I have experienced profound meaning and joy when I lay that crap down and go and follow Jesus. And it doesn't make sense in my brain. It's like, why do I feel better giving stuff away? That doesn't make any sense. I can do less now that I have less money. Why am I happier? Because that's what it means to be human, and Jesus is over there. And that's brokenness and nonsense, but we keep going that way because we're not letting his truth infiltrate our minds. We're still believing the same lie that a dumb little snake told us thousands of years ago. God's holding out on you. Go get your own life. Do it your way. And to die to myself, I would say it this way. This is my word, right? Put in words. This is the way that I want to word it. I think that the life God created us for is found when we give up and lay down the life we're trying to create for ourselves. When Jesus says, die to yourself, I think what he's saying is, you are trying so hard to build a life that you think will make you happy. It's not working. Let it go. Die to it. Lay it down. Stop fighting to go that direction and come this way. Follow me and you'll find something better. Trust me that actually the end of the line has a blessing that you never would even imagine. And you'll never experience as long as you're trying to get that way. You know how the Gentiles do it. They lord it over them. Not so with you. Instead, if you want to be great, come and follow me at the end of the line. Come and live differently. Wake up to that reality. Rise to that life. Shine to other people that reality. There's something better to be had by living self-sacrificially, generously, kindly, loving your neighbor, giving up on you all the time, being the center of the universe. And this is life of faith, right? This is the life of discipleship that says, I'm following a crucified Messiah to the cross. That's where he's leading me. It's a life that prioritizes God's word and seeks to become what he created me to be, even and especially when it doesn't make sense. If it made sense, faith wouldn't be an issue, right? If it made sense to my mind, we'd all just do it. And Jesus wouldn't have had to come into our humanity and say, you're wrong, follow me to truth. Trust me. And that's what we're called to wake up, rise, and shine to, you guys. That I hope I communicate it well, but like part of shining to others is actually finding the life that God has for me. It's not just like, okay, now I've risen to life, now I should probably be nice to people and share. It's not like rising to life is shining to other people. I am finding the life God has for me when I am choosing to give it away, when I'm choosing to surrender and die to the things that I always want for myself. I'm actually finding and rising to a better life. And it's completely upside down, right? Jesus took the whole thing and went, whoop. But he did it because Satan took the whole thing and went, whoop. Because this is what we were always made for, and what we're doing now is broken. So let's wake up to something better. Let's trust the one who knows what's better and find life in him by following him and obeying him, even when it's crazy into the worst places we can imagine. And when we do, we'll realize that it's better. And that thing that is better will shine to the world around us because we're choosing to live that way. So that's what we mean by wake up, rise, and shine. We make disciples who are people following Jesus by laying their lives down for each other, believing that that is the only way the world is ever going to be what God wants it to be, and the only way we'll ever find true life to the fullest.